Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg, and Andre Kleiner's on the line. Hey, Andre.
Hello, Fred. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday. Yeah, we were just talking about dealing with new technology, and just as we closed that out, you said, you know, so how do you deal with new suppliers or suppliers that are bringing you new technology?
And yeah, not necessarily new suppliers, but even the old suppliers who develop new technology and supply it to you. So, how you approach this and how you understand reliability and risk better.
Yeah. Well, let's dive into that. We'll take a real quick break and then we'll jump right into it. Hi there. It's Fred here. Do you or those around you use MTBF? If so, I have to ask you why. Check out my short book, The Reliability Metric, a quick and valuable improvement over MTBF. In it, you will find details on how just poor metric MTBF is for reliability and specifics on what you should do instead. A useful reliability metric will help you and your team make better decisions. To find out more and to get a copy, go to ascendoreliability.com/go/metric. All right. Yeah. Andre, you know, it's when you first mentioned this, you know, dealing with new technology, there's plenty of things we can do. And it comes down to, well, I think we summarized our last episode by saying, don't just run your standard test that you've been running on everything all the time. It just may not tell you anything useful about this new technology. It may fail in a different way. It may have different failure mechanisms, different acceleration factors, on and on. You got to ask some basic questions right away. Now, dealing with suppliers that are bringing you stuff, I think a lot of what we talked about in our last episode still applies, right? It's still, you need to know how's it going to fail.
Yeah, it's still a new technology, and you still need to understand how it's going to fail and what kind of environment it's going to face. But speaking of suppliers, I think there are probably two major categories of suppliers, at least we have to deal with, is suppliers like well-established, like if we're buying ICs, folks like, I don't know, Motorola or Freescale, who's been around for a while, and they have usually resources and staff, people who actually you can go and ask questions about reliability, and they would know what you're talking about,
right.
And especially now with functional safety standard, and you've heard me rambling about it.
Ranting is the right word, I think.
Yeah, ranting. Yeah, because they ask about fit rates or failure rates of certain components, and in many cases we can go back to guys like I said, like Motorola or Freescale or ST, and ask them those questions. But also we often deal with new suppliers, like something totally new, like some camera, infrared camera or radars, who really don't have this kind of resource and this kind of experience. And you ask them a question, they may not even understand what you're asking them.
Well, to be fair, Andre, I've asked those questions from well-established houses also, of saying, well, how does your product fail? And it's deer in the headlights. They're kind of, and it's, I'm talking to their quality manager, you know, and I think part of it is they don't want to admit that they have weaknesses in their product from liability point of view. You know, the sales guys never tell you what's going to fail. You're talking to the wrong people there. But if you're talking to their equivalent reliability professionals, they should understand that. But I've run into it where, well, we ran 77 samples and they all passed on this, you know, IEC standard.
Like, then it must be good, right?
Must be good. That was their argument. And I'm like, no, you know, you're down into this, you know, this super small dimension size on this new technology. And you're saying you're not going to have any of these problems. You're not crossing any thresholds. And you're not even testing for that. Come on.
Yeah. Yeah. With IECs and getting smaller and smaller, and that's becoming a problem, especially in those what I call harsh environment industries, mm-hmm. like defense industry, aerospace, automotive, and there's been some studies showing that at some point we're actually going to reach that limit. Where life expected life of an IC due to like silicon wear out can be shorter than expected life in the field, which is now like in the automotive is 15 years, and in aerospace I think it's longer, it's maybe close to 30 years.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Some applications certainly.
Yeah,
it's you know, we're getting way more powerful computers and cell phones and all these devices we have, we're really driving to smaller scales and more power, more feature sets. Yet in the industrial world, I mean, we're still using pretty simple, basic electronics and technology that will last 30 to 40 years. And you know, relays, they still work. You know, if all I need is there a bottle here or not? I don't need a, you know, 8 billion device or a transistor device to help me sort that out. A relay with one on-off function works just fine. So I think part of what we face, and especially with vendors, is they're trying to sell their new technology. They're trying to say, here's, if you buy this, it becomes a new industry for us. And it's, you know, there's all kinds of reasons they want to do that. There's a whole other push of vendors and suppliers are trying to get, you know, built into your designs going forward. It improves their deliveries and improves their sales forecasting, all kinds of things. So there's this other motivation when dealing with suppliers bringing you new technology.
Yeah, and I think the approach is kind of similar to what we've discussed in the other in the other trends.
Well, it's complicated. Discussion. Yeah, in our last discussion, we talked about, you know, doing fault tree analysis and basically asking, well, what's the environment?
Yeah, FMEA or DRBFM. Right. And I think the same approach should work with the suppliers. So, like, even if they don't have reliability experts, you can still talk to them and ask those questions. And another thing, what I noticed between like a newcomers and established suppliers is like newcomers sometimes kind of afraid to talk, and they listen to lawyers who tell, oh, like, yeah, like lawyers would always tell you, like, say nothing. But in the supplier customer relationship, it may be actually the opposite, because if situation like that happens, then the customer starts thinking, oh, it must be something very serious. When if you let basically engineers and technical people talk to each other, they may solve the problem and find the solution without kind of aggravating and making things more serious than they need to be.
Well, and that's what I've run into. I think one of my favorite stories is a major high-end supplier was sending us a new solder attachment pad, a new metallization. And so they sent us 30 samples, and we ran some thermal cycling on this new interconnect technology, and we ended up with black pad. It was a corrosion type fault in the pad that when you take it apart, it actually looks black, and hence its name. We said we had 27 out of the 30 fail, guys. And you saw us set up the test. You helped us design the test because it was an area of concern, and we had the facilities to do the testing, and you provided the samples. And so I sent them the results, right? And this is a Fortune 500 company, you know, closer to the top end of the list, and a big lab and lots of research and all this other good stuff. And they said, oh, That was just random sample error. We actually, in the field, we only have like three part per billion failure rate. It's proven to be extremely useful and practical. And we've sent millions and millions of these out, and we've only had one reported failure, and that was when somebody dropped it on the floor. And so that was just a fluke that you ended up getting only bad samples. Okay, let's work out the calculation of how likely that is, that by random chance.
Let's try some binomial here, right?
Yeah.
And see what kind of reliability we get from this kind of sample.
It was like one chance in a 10 raised to the 169th power or something like that. We had much better chance of winning the lottery of any state whatsoever, or all of them simultaneously, than we did of getting this random sample of bad products. We didn't buy their product. Now, one of the things I found that works with vendors and suppliers is this basic idea of what we've talked about before is ask the right questions. But you have to build a relationship. They have to trust you. It's this open kimono kind of approach. And you have to give a little bit. They have to give a little bit. And we both win. You have to meet and make it work for both sides. Yet, I think in general, it's this trust and verify. If you say it won't fail, I'm going to, and I still have a concern, I'm going to test it. I'm going to evaluate it. I'm going to explore it. And if I find stuff, I'll share it with you, which is one way of saying, hey, I'm looking. I'm not just taking your word for this. Come clean, basically. I think part of that discussion is different with the suppliers because they're not in your organization. Many times you have to go under a non-disclosure agreement and then lawyers get involved. So I think it changes the structure
a
little bit. Yeah. Then you know you're done. You just go find another supplier if lawyers are involved. But I think it's the same basic sets of questions, and it's different because we're two separate organizations and there's this natural tendency to negotiate, I want to get the best deal out of this. And I think both sides need to give a little bit. And that's what we did with this new technology I was dealing with years ago, is we said, hey, look, you're saying it's great. We didn't say it out loud, but we don't trust you. We have our concerns. And would you agree to let us run a test? You provide some samples, we'll run the test. You can oversee it. You get the results. And then we'll use that information to help make a decision. And they agreed, and they gave us samples and told us, you know, the types of things that they were concerned about. But I think if you just say to a vendor, give me all the reliability details and all the ways it can fail, and then we'll interpret it, I don't think many are going to agree to that.
Yeah, and like I said, in some cases, they might not have resources. And, you know, the interesting situation we ran into recently is when a smaller supplier, like a startup, was mm-hmm. actually bought by a bigger company, which was well-established. Mm-hmm. So this kind of creates interesting situations where, like, if you're using technology coming from that smaller vendor and you're trying to work with them and you're getting nowhere, the question is what you're going to do, because we actually tried to involve that big company which bought them, but the smaller company became actually a little defensive because it sounded like we were complaining about them to
calling mom on them.
Yeah. So those are kind of interesting situations where you need to kind of explain that. I mean, like in those harsh environment industries, we have a little bit different expectations and a little bit different requirements, which their parts need to meet. And that's where basically we need to work together. And so they can utilize our resources to make their product better.
That's right.
So, but like I said, that did create some kind of unusual situation, I would say.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I think it's the approach that we make. You know, the what I have found is if you go to the website or you call the tech services folks for any component supplier or any supplier, and you say, so what's the reliability of component XYZ? And they're going to say it's 200 fit or it's 30,000 RMTB offer, and they pause, like, okay, I answered your question, I'll go away. And unfortunately, in my travels and working with people, is many people stop with that. That's what they think, that's the only answer, and suppliers only provide that answer. So what I advocate is, when you're dealing with a supplier with or not with new technology, is ask, where's that come from? How do you know that? What's the evidence?
What kind of tests you ran? Like, it was a field, data came from the field, or you just ran a highly accelerated test, like increasing temperature 3x, and using this huge acceleration factor just to get those hours in? Because I think we talked before that if you look at what fit is, which is failure in time, or actually failures per billion hours.
Right.
One billion hours is, I believe, like 144,000 years. So how do you get that many hours of testing? You obviously need a lot of parts, and you need to use like a several thousand X acceleration factor, which doesn't
exist. I've asked that question. How do you justify that you're at 10 fit? And they say, well, it's a lot like another product we made, and we used 10 fit for that, and nobody complained. All right. All right. So you got new metallization, new process, new assembly line. You've only made 16 of these total, and you're trying to sell me a million of them, and you're claiming it's 10 fit?
10 fit, yeah.
How do you know? How can you possibly know? You know, and even using simulations and other risk, you know, mitigate techniques and figuring this out, I much prefer a vendor that says, all right, we don't know the exact failure rate in your application. We don't. You're in a harsh environment. We've studied mostly these environments. Here's how we can extrapolate it. Here's our estimate. Or we think it's going to be a thermal cycling induced failure, a delamination of these two layers. What's your thermal cycle? How are you going to use it? All right, well, that goes into this model, and here's a rough estimate for you. We only tested 20 samples, so it's crude. It's rough. That's our best estimate. I don't want somebody to say, oh, trust us, it'll work. No.
Yeah, no, that's not the answer, which will make you feel comfortable.
That's right. I think we need to ask, like we talked about in our last episode, the same basic questions. What will fail, and what environment am I using this in? And then understanding those failure mechanisms allows us then to use literature, previous work, studies, design our own tests, use the vendor's tests, and interpret it to our conditions. There's lots of ways to answer the question. But with suppliers, I think the key takeaway that's different is you have to get past the barriers of the sales team and the lawyers first and build a relationship so that you can have those open discussions.
Yeah, and talk directly to the technical people who actually probably know a little bit more than sales, and especially lawyers, to get that information. But like I said, we haven't had much luck in getting reliability information, even if we ask just for fit rates, because just like you said, it's sometimes based on either previous models or guess, or maybe using some handbooks like Telcordia or, God forbid, Mill Handbook 217.
But I'd rather know, where did it come from? So if somebody gives me reliability data, I says, well, what's the evidence that supports this? How do you know this? And is it relevant? And if you get an answer of, well, trust me, we know what we're doing, you know, we're a big company, we know what we're doing, I'm like, no, big companies can cause product recalls for us too. I think it's important enough to get the right information so you can make an informed decision. And if you're not getting information, then it's an assessment. Do you need to know more to answer your own questions?
And the best answer in my mind, the answer which I don't hear very often, is our numbers are based on field returns. Mm-hmm. And that would be the best answer. But unfortunately, very few companies actually collect this data. And that's why being a member of SAE, Electronics Reliability Committee, we recently issued a new standard on how to calculate the failure rates from field data.
Oh, interesting.
Which I think was very helpful. Yeah.
Yeah. No, you have to send me a link or title for that so we can put it in the notes.
Yep. SAEJ3083.
Okay. So. SAEJ3083. Always informative.
Of all the data, I always trust more the field data. This is number one.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. So let's ask our listeners, what are your hints and tips for getting good, and I'm going to put in great big bold letters, good field or good reliability figures from your suppliers? Do you just cruise their website, or do you build relationships, or something in between? How do you go about doing this, and what kind of hurdles or obstacles do you run into that may make some good discussions going forward? So please join the conversation. Head over to reliability.fm, and you can find a suggestion box and comments on all of the episodes, and we'd love to hear from you. All right, Andre. I think there's still more to this new technology thing. We have to revisit it as we go forward. Yeah.
A lot more.
All right. Well, thanks for bringing it up, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you. Have a good day.
You too. Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.